Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast on a Friday, sliding into the weekend. And the hot story this morning in the Politico playbook was about the use of the term crisis. And surprise, surprise, Politico thinks, why are the Biden people sticking to this whole idea that you can't call it a crisis? In fact, they said, why are they sticking to the Orwellian position that the border surge is not a crisis? Orwellian. Oh, now you're using the fighting words. Yeah, well, maybe the Orwellian word is, it's a challenge. The migrant surge is a challenge. Politico is basically coming at this sort of Biden-shaming position because Democrats don't like the way this is going under Biden and who they often call immigration advocates say this is a crisis because they're coming at Biden from the left and saying they are not advancing the ball enough. They are not opening enough NASA facilities or whatever to house thousands and thousands more of illegal aliens. But you never call them illegal aliens because, as we know, the radical left always insists no person is illegal. I would like you to try that the next time you're pulled over for speeding. I'm not illegal. Well, you're committing a violation of the law. So when you are an unauthorized immigrant without documents, sometimes that can be described as illegal immigration. These are terms, though. We have these fights over terms. Media bias is often focusing in on the terms that are used. And for the most part, our pro-Biden media have tried to stick to his terminology. Thou shalt not call it a crisis. In fact, Scott Whitlock wrote yesterday, the Homeland Security Secretary, Mr. Mayorkas, appeared on the CBS This Morning program. And, you know, obviously the Trump position was the outrageous, inhumane position. And CBS described the Biden position as a bit more nuanced. Now, would you say it's a bit, if the Trump position was monstrous, don't you think it would be a bit better than that? To use a bit is probably insulting to the Bidenites. We would say that the Biden position is a mess. CBS describes it as nuanced. And the Biden administration is running around saying, well, we told them not to come. Well, your policies did all the talking for you. When you basically said, oh, we're not going to deport these people like Trump did. Oh, well, then what happens? You can't say we didn't invite them in or we didn't encourage them to come in. We didn't send that message with the policies, the executive orders you installed. And even the television interviews that Mr. Mayorkas is doing, where he talks about the illegal immigrants, and it's all about, we're going to feed them, we're going to house them, we're going to educate the children. Everything that we do is about the children. And it has that whole idea that somehow the federal government, the Border Patrol, the Department of Health and Human Services are welcoming in tens of thousands of illegal immigrants and sounding like the genie in Aladdin. Poof, what do you need? Poof, what do you need? Poof, what do you need? And what the news media utterly lacks in this instance is any reflection of the what they consider the Trumpian point of view, which is how much is this going to cost the taxpayer? We can go back to the George W. Bush years when they were debating comprehensive immigration reform. I did a study back then in 2006 and found back then the news media was all about portraying the entire situation from the perspective of the illegal immigrant. And usually the dominant speaker in these stories was the illegal immigrant. The main sympathetic central figure was almost always an illegal immigrant. Jorge wants to come out of the shadows. You can have sympathy for people who live in poor countries who want to live in the United States. Everyone understands why you would want to live in the United States. But they are not interested in visiting the opposite side of the argument. How much does this cost? How much does this cost us in health care, in welfare, in criminal justice? How much does this alter our democracy? It's considered a terrible thing to try to say that the Democrats are in favor of mass immigration from Latin America because they presume these immigrants are going to be Democrat voters in the future. I like to joke if all the immigrants from Latin America were conservative Catholics who were destined to vote Republican, it'd be the Democrats who'd be building the wall. There's a very partisan political interest in this. Their presumption is always that what they call what, the browning of America is also the liberalizing of America. We have a blog up on Newsbusters with Joy Reid doing the usual thing, which is Republicans are afraid of all the brown and black people coming over the border. And then she cites this idea that the Republicans will try to scare you by saying everybody here is a potential Democrat voter. Don't tell us that that's not part of the plan. Some of us were back here in with the Clinton-Gore campaign in 1996 that were trying to step up immigration in 96. There was a presumption there. Now, as long as we're on Politico, the batter of Politico, or started with Politico, we should mention that they also have a story on Politico today about how the Biden administration really doesn't have a policy set about dealing with COVID at the border. And so the irony of all of this is while we have the news media, I see this particularly on NBC, running around screeching about how the kids are on spring break at the beach. Super spreader, super spreader. And it doesn't matter that it's harder to get COVID outside on the beach. Socially distance. Enjoy your beach. They can fuss about the beach and have no care whatsoever about COVID coming across the border. There's no testing for every person who comes across the border. There's not an admission test. Well, you can't come into the United States unless we find that you're COVID negative. That's not the system. And the news media, especially, let's just call out CNN, because CNN is the coronavirus news network. This should be a story they would be all over, that they'd be doing hour on the hour. Super spreader, coming across the border. Well, they can't do that, can they? Because it sounds Trumpian. Some other things on the potpourri today. Column for Friday is about a strange and nutty article on TheRoot.com. The Root, and their slogan is, the blacker the content, the sweeter the truth. Well, that's baloney. this guy, Damon Young, wrote an article called Whiteness is a Pandemic. Now, just try to imagine for a minute if we had someone writing an article with the title Blackness is a Pandemic. How long would that person last in polite society? And yet, this guy's got several cuckoo paragraphs. I will give you one. I'm going to read this to you in Eugene Robinson voice. Whiteness is a public health crisis. It shortens life expectancies. It pollutes air. It constricts equilibrium. It devastates forests. It melts ice caps. It sparks and funds wars. It flattens dialects. It infests consciousnesses. And it kills people. White people and people who are not white, my mom included. There will be people who die in 2050 because of white supremacy-induced decisions from 1850. These people, you just can't refute them. You can't fight with them. You can't contest anything they say because everything that's happening today and now everything that's happening 30 years from now can somehow be blamed on 1850.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
But what really caught me when I was trying to research this writer, Damon Young, yesterday, he's a contributor to the New York Times opinion section, and he wrote a piece last July that was titled, Yeah, Let's Not Talk About Race, in which he writes about how he has white people come up to him on the street and tell them they love his book. Yes, his book is called What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. Usually it's what makes you stronger. Blacker equals stronger because we're very racial. So the white people come up, the white liberals come up and they say, I love your book. Tell me more about race. And he mocks that. He calls it with all caps or all caps at the beginnings of the word, a serious conversations about race, which he abbreviates to SCAR. He doesn't want to be scar-bombed at the Jiffy Lube. Don't come talk to me, white liberals, about race, because that's what I do full-time. And when I'm at the Jiffy Lube or the grocery store, I'm off the clock. You're asking me to work for you for free. Those are the words he actually uses. And what it really implies is, I have this provocative opinion that whiteness is a pandemic. And so when the white people come up to me and want to talk to me about their guilt, I don't want to talk to you because guess what? He's kind of a racist. If whiteness is a pandemic, if whiteness kills people, well, white liberals apparently are part of that. And yet Damon Young, his book was celebrated by NPR, by the Washington Post, by Entertainment Weekly. Because if you're a marginalized person, quote unquote, you can say things that are incredibly racist, and that's okay because you've been oppressed. And anyone who encourages this doesn't get to come forward and say, I'm a uniter. I'm for ending the hatred. This guy is a walking, talking example of hate speech. One of the other things we found this week, Eric Schiner at MRC TV was listening to a Zoom call. A couple of reporters were talking about the press under Biden. Jeff Bennett, who is a White House reporter for NBC and MSNBC, made a rather frank admission because they asked about COVID restrictions for Biden. How did Biden use the COVID restrictions to control his message and to control the press corps? And Jeff Bennett was fairly frank in saying, well, this is what they did during the transition. They require at the White House now that the media outlets pay for their own COVID tests every day. And if that's at $180 a pop, well, NBC will pay for me and several producers and cameramen because they can afford the 180 times four every day. But he acknowledges anybody who's a freelancer, they're not going to come in and pay $180 a day to get into the White House. You've heard of poll taxes? This is a press tax. Nobody's really protesting. He's acknowledging it. And he's acknowledging that COVID restrictions allowed them to limit the number of reporters into Biden's transition press conferences. And then he said, well, some of us were known quantities. You love this part. This was the part that really got Eric Schneider's ear a-buzzing. We're known quantities. He was not going to call on some local reporter he didn't know who was going to ask a challenging question. In other words, Jeff Bennett saying, we here at NBC are a known quantity, aren't going to ask suck-up questions. And when you go and look at the kind of questions that were put forward by NBC during the transition, by Jeff Bennett, by Mike Memoli, by Kristen Welker, these were all questions that were basically like, excuse me, Mr. President-elect, please denounce Donald Trump. They were known quantities. This is the kind of thing that makes you skeptical about how tough the press conference is going to be when Biden finally holds one. I'm sure there'll be questions he finds too tough, that he finds objectionable. We'll probably be able to do a come-on-man count of three or four. But this Jeff Bennett admission is really something, because he's saying, we are known at NBC as pushovers. And even when they're not pushovers, if Peter Alexander asks Jen Psaki a fairly tough question, it ain't showing up on the nightly news. Finally, something that the wife and I watch these FBI shows on CBS on the DVR, FBI and FBI Most Wanted. And I'm not a big fan of the Dick Wolf shows in general, but we've just gotten into the habit of watching these. And Brett Baker noticed this too, is that the episode of FBI this week was about a New York Times reporter who gets abducted, shoved in the back of a car, or in the trunk of a car, and they're trying to figure out what was going on. And there were some Russian mobster villains and so on. But first, before we got to that point, earlier in the show, they're tracking an ex-cop, who it turns out is now a private eye. And he admits to the two FBI agents, you know, I was hired by who? A group called AIM, or Accountability in Media, to get dirt on the New York Times reporter. And we thought, wow, that is really close to the real life Accuracy in Media. Now, I don't know if Accuracy in Media has ever hired a private detective to get some dirt on reporters. That has not been in the playbook at the old Media Research Center. But what's ironic about all of this is that it's just as likely, if not more likely, that the New York Times would hire a private detective. They've got all the resources to do it, and they can hide it behind anonymously sourced people. Or they can use information that some Democrats using a private detective. Those of you who are more advanced in age remember the name Terry Lenzner, who was a private investigator the Clintons used. So the Democrats can go around digging up dirt, kind of like they did with Fusion GPS and the Steele dossier. And they can take what they find to be damaging accusations and couch them all in this anonymous sources say, we're not going to tell you where we got it, how we got it, who paid for it. That's all going to be hidden. Because at the New York Times, the truth is more important than ever, except when it comes to the truth of how we get this dirt. That's just today's lecture, because anonymous sources suck in general. I'm sure they can be used in limited examples. When I was a White House reporter for Little Old World magazine in 2001 and 2002, they had the policy, no anonymous sources. It makes your copy a little less spicy. But it also means you're not hiding stuff. So we conclude with this little motto that I have, which is, don't come lecture us about transparency while you're using anonymous sources to put forward your agenda, liberal media. So make sure you come back and see us once, twice, 24 times a day. Come listen to this podcast now 3 times a week. Thanks for listening.